Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
A very warm welcome to this edition of Africa Link with me, Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Zipporah Nyambura. Remember, we are also live on Facebook. Share the audio and give us your feedback.
On the program today, South Sudan's warring factions sign a ceasefire deal that takes effect on Christmas Eve. Could this be a Christmas gift to the people of South Sudan?
I personally don't celebrate signing of documents because we have seen so many agreements being signed over agreements. And what we want to celebrate is when the guns have gone silent.
A white Zimbabwean farmer evicted under the government of Robert Mugabe 6 months ago returns back to the farm he once owned.
We are overjoyed. We are over the moon. We thought we would never see this day coming. Getting back to the farm has given not just us, but the whole community hope that it's a new Zimbabwe, a new country.
Well, these are some of the stories that we've lined up for you, but first is a chance to listen to what's been happening around the world.
I am Kai Dombach with the DW News. Separatist parties won an absolute majority in Catalonia's snap elections. Ousted Catalan president Carles Puigdemont watched from Brussels as his Together for Catalonia party clinched 34 seats in the 135-seat regional parliament.
And it is clear, despite all the efforts come from the Spanish state, the violence, the repression, despite this, we are stronger than ever.
Puigdemont also called for a meeting with Spanish Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy. White Zimbabwean farmer Rob Smart returned to his land for the first time after it was taken from him by riot police under a controversial land distribution law ordered by previous President Robert Mugabe. Smart is the first white farmer to have his land returned to him in the southern African nation under new President Emmerson Mnangagwa. But in South Africa, the ANC plans to introduce a law that will make it possible to take land from white farmers without compensation. AgriSA, an organization that represents farmers throughout the country, was not pleased.
We are not satisfied with the decision that has been taken. I think this point in time where our economy is flat, where we need investor confidence, we need less populist remarks like this. I think this decision does not come at a good time.
This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. British Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson said he wants to repair relations between the United Kingdom and Russia. In his first trip to Russia by a UK diplomat in 5 years, Johnson, however, accused Russia of attempting to interfere with its vote to leave the European Union, also known as Brexit. The United Nations Security Council is scheduled to vote on new sanctions against North Korea on Friday. The sanctions would include banning petroleum exports to the Asian nation and forced repatriation of North Koreans living abroad. The threat of sanctions comes after the hermit nation continued to operate its nuclear and missile programs in defiance of UN resolutions. Uganda's defense forces on Friday said they had launched attacks on the Allied Democratic Forces rebel group in the eastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo. The army said it carried out the attacks with airstrikes and long-range weapons. The group was responsible for an attack that killed 14 UN peacekeepers in the same area earlier this month. The group has been blamed for other attacks earlier this year in the eastern part of the country. And in sports, the German Bundesliga enters its winter break this week. Bayern Munich has an 11-point lead over second-place Schalke at the halfway point of the season. Dortmund, Leverkusen, Leipzig, and Mönchengladbach round out the European competition spots. Bremen, Hamburg, and Cologne are sitting at the bottom of the table. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dombach.
Welcome back to the program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And we'd like to welcome our listeners following us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Leave your comments there and we'll always read them whenever we can. Now, South Sudan's warring factions signed a new agreement to cease hostilities and protect civilians in the latest effort to calm a devastating civil war. The two sides also signed an agreement to grant humanitarian access to conflict-affected areas after days of talks in neighboring Ethiopia, brokered by the Intergovernmental Authority on Development Regional Bloc, IGAD. The ceasefire is set to begin first thing on Sunday morning, a timely Christmas gift for the civilians in the country if the conflict doesn't erupt again. From Juba, Wakewudu sent this report.
South Sudanese citizens have welcomed the latest ceasefire deal, saying it gives a glimpse of hope for peace. But they all want to see one thing: putting the commitment by the parties to the agreement into action. Margaret Modi is a resident in Juba.
These protocols have been signing since 2015. The protocol which was signed, and again, the other ones were signed in Tanzania. Up to now, we have not seen any outcome of the other protocols. I hope this time, the one which was signed yesterday, it will yield a fruit.
Another Juba resident, Wani Michael, also welcomed the deal and wants to see the guns of all the warring parties go silent. Michael also wants humanitarian aid agencies and citizens move freely to any town and village across the country.
I personally don't celebrate signing of documents because we have seen so many agreements being signed over agreements. And what we want to celebrate is when the guns have gone silent. So we want to see how the document that is signed in Addis Ababa will translate itself into what is going on the ground. How will the forces of the different warring parties, how will they adhere to the cessation of hostilities?
James Okuk, a political analyst and a lecturer of political science at the University of Juba, describes the signing of the ceasefire deal as a move in the right direction by all parties, adding that it gives hope for the restoration of peace in the country.
What people will wait is that if the parties implement it, people will clap for them, and then they will hold them to their shoulders and tell them they are good peacemakers, and then they will close the chapter of the past. And then they open a new chapter for the future. But if they try to misbehave and then violate it as if it was the same agreement they have violated this time, the punitive measures are very clear there.
Mediators are yet to monitor the commitment of the parties in respecting the ceasefire before a new page of talks on power sharing, transitional justice and security arrangements, among other issues, is convened.
Wakese Modudu, that report. And someone following us on the Facebook page, Bariki Bariki, says, thanks for your news. You're welcome, Bariki, and you can leave your comments there.
And Isaac, of course, we have had a lot of feedback on that story in South Sudan. Unfortunately, many people are commenting on the news that one South Sudanese rebel group has already accused the government troops of attacking their base only a day after the parties signed a ceasefire. This is according to Reuters news agency. And Kumachum is also saying, peace, peace, peace. Will peace come to our country, South Sudan?
And Majang Shen posted a photo of a person, not clapping, rather sarcastically, and writes, me and when my friends jubilated that the SPLM in government and in opposition finally signed cessation of hostilities. I'm agreeing, but at the back of my mind, it will be just like any other previously signed peace deal. Let's hope this will hold anyway.
Yeah, that's what many people are actually saying in that report. Anav Anjaria is also saying, I hope the signing can restore peace in South Sudan. This ethnic conflict has to and should end. And we also have one more from Jean Counter, who says US-Europe started up the Hornets, that is Libya, and walked away. Helped create South Sudan and walked away. And now, Isaac, let me take you to another story making headlines here in Europe. It's in Catalonia, where separatist parties have won a slim majority in the regional elections, deepening a national crisis over whether the wealthy regional should remain a part of Spain. Deposed President Carlos Puigdemont won 34 seats. Along with two other separatist parties, they now have 70 out of the 135 seats in the regional parliament. Anti-independence centrist party is the largest with its 37 seats, making it unclear who will form the next government. Now, Puigdemont, who is in exile in Brussels, has called for a dialogue with the Spanish Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy. But as our correspondent in Spain, Barbara Vessel, tells DW's Sumi Somaskanda, this call may not resolve the crisis.
Well, this is not the first offer of dialogue from Carlos Puigdemont, and it seems that he is continuing in Belgium after his relative election victory to do what he did before. He is wiggling all over the place, because during the crisis in October here, one day he said, oh, I want to talk to Rajoy. He even sent a letter to Madrid saying, let's talk about all this. And then just hours later, he came out and said, but we still will declare unilateral independence. No, that will not work. I mean, this is just relatively useless, because Spain is not going to play his game in that sense and saying, OK, just take it all and make Catalonia independent if you so want.
Barbara, taking all of this into account, where does this leave the question of forming a government in this region?
It seems relatively impossible. If Puigdemont from exile says, but I'm still the president, and the two big independence parties don't get together and say, okay, we'll organize ourselves and we sort of create we appoint some people to stand in our places. The second in commands will take over until we can solve something. And there is no sign for that. They're again at a deadlock. And also the smallest of the three, the very hard left party, only 4 seats, but still they hold the key to the majority. They ratchet up the price and they say, if you don't go for unilateral independence, we won't support you. So we'll be looking at a minority government probably. So it is as intractable and unsolvable as it's been before the elections. They might as well not have happened at all.
DW's Barbara Vessel reporting from Spain.
Now, a white Zimbabwean farmer evicted under the government of President Robert Mugabe has returned to a hero's welcome as the first to get his land back under new President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Robert Smart's return to his farm with military support is a sign that the new leader is reforming an issue that had hastened the country's international isolation. Listen to him when he was handed back the farm.
We are overjoyed. We are over the moon. We thought we would never see this day coming. Getting back to the farm has given not just us, but the whole community hope that it's a new Zimbabwe, a new country.
Just to remind you, hundreds of farmers were evicted, often violently, under a program that Mugabe called Righting of Colonial Wrongs. But the new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, is trying to change course, including righting some wrongs done by his predecessor. Wilf Mbanga, a political analyst and commentator on Zimbabwe affairs, has been telling me that he was surprised by Mnangagwa's sympathy towards evicted white farmers.
Well, I was surprised that he would do that, because, you know, Mnangagwa has been part of Mugabe's regime for the last 37 years. And he was, you know, in on all the decisions that were made. So for him now to essentially reverse that policy is a big surprise.
Now that he has turned around and is giving back land to the white farmers, is this a sign that Mnangagwa is reforming the land issue that had hastened the country's international isolation?
Not at all. This is just, you know, a few white farmers will be given their land back, but not all. In fact, he did say when he came to power that the land reform program was irreversible. He has also said that he will compensate those whose land was taken away from them. Some farmers who will be allowed to go back to their land. There will be some farmers who will be paid in cash or kind for the farms that they lost.
Now, Mnangagwa is desperate to revive the once prosperous Zimbabwe and has just months to win public support before elections scheduled for August 2018 at the latest. Do you think giving back land to white farmers will win him much-needed support among the local black population?
Not necessarily. Well, don't forget, I mean, some of these white farmers were very good farmers. They employed lots of labor. I think he sees it as part of employment creation in rural areas. These white farmers have, you know, will be paying workers. Unlike a lot of the black farmers who got land under the Mugabe regime.
As a Zimbabwean, how big is the land issue among the local population, the blacks and whites? I mean, how important is the land factor in Zimbabwean politics?
Well, the land question was politicized by Mugabe for his obvious reason. One of the slogans was the land is the economy, you know, and that the land is very important. And in fact, in the past, the land has been, you know, central to our economy, in that a lot of farmers grew crops that were not only sold in inside the country, but also in the region. We were the breadbasket of the region. And right now, Zimbabwe imports food. 70% of the food consumed in Zimbabwe today is imported. If we're going to turn around the economy, it means that we have to grow most of our crops ourselves to reduce the wage, the import bill.
That was Wilf Mbanga, a political analyst. Welcome back once again to the program with me, Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Zipporah Nyambura. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, he is referred to as one of the most controversial bloggers in Kenya and has hundreds of thousands of followers on both Facebook and Twitter. His name is Robert Alai.
I think that the internet offers the most safe, the most convenient way of activism. It's also a very good platform for engaging, you know, reaching out to communities beyond the borders, the local borders.
And we would like to hear from you. What are you doing for Christmas? Are you traveling abroad or to your ancestral homes to celebrate with your families? Just go to our Facebook page and leave your comments there, and we always read them whenever we can. Zippy.
You're right, Isaac. And that is where we start off this story now. Mm-hmm. The craze to travel up country and celebrate Christmas with relatives remains quite strong in many African countries. In Uganda, different bus terminals in the capital Kampala are usually a beehive of activities as hundreds of passengers scramble for space in queues to board buses on their way to join loved ones in the villages. And as our DW correspondent Frank Eager tells us, many are even determined to dig deeper into their pockets despite the hiked fares in the festive season.
At Kwalisel bus terminal on Nachivubo Road, it is nearly impossible to walk through the huge crowds as travelers with huge luggage of foods and furniture scramble for seats in buses. Bonnie Okello has a huge responsibility as he heads to his home in Kabong District.
You see, on a day like Christmas, I must make sure I go every year. I'm everything for my family. When I'm in the village, I know my wife is there, my children are there. Because I'm the one to buy for my wife clothes. I'm the one to buy for my children clothes. I'm the one to carry things like cooking oil from Kampala, take home there. So I don't miss.
There is huge excitement and the buses here are fully booked. I meet Grace Namulindwa, her husband Benson Boer, along with their two children.
Oh, wow, wow, wow. Christmas away from Kampala to the village is the best experience ever. In times like this, it's when we gather as family members. It's always once in a year that we meet and have fun. We look at different things like bull roasting, going to the farm.
Kampala has a lot of stress. Travel, work, and the environment itself, there's a lot of pollution. So when we go to the countryside, home is so peaceful, the air there is fresh, it's so quiet. So, I mean, this is the time that we also happen to meet relatives and friends.
Fares have also doubled at this time. Peter Mwebasi, a tout at the Link Bus at Namirembe Bus Terminal in Kampala, tells me why.
We have to overcharge. We have to raise the charges because this is the only time throughout the year when we, when traveling, it's a single way. Coming back to town, we'll drive empty and we'll have to consume fuel. So in that matter, we have to charge the double trip. People are running down to the villages for Christmas.
For many traders, Christmas is also booming business time. Rachel Kabagweri, who sells children and women's wear, says they have also hiked prices for their products, a move that is affecting their sales this festive season.
So we are here waiting for customers, but people are few, so the turn-up is slow. And what we expected is not the right thing that we are seeing on the ground. Alternatively, they fear the price. Sometimes when it is a season, we tend to hike the prices.
But the Christmas season has its downside. The Uganda Police spokesperson Emilian Kaima explains why they have now beefed up security.
Festive seasons come with the heightened crime, both at home, in transit, highway robberies could occur. Where you are going from town to probably up country, some may think that you carry loads of money. It's an opportune moment for them to come and rob you and possibly even kill you. Deployments are being planned and already on the way.
Frank Higa reporting from Uganda.
And we've been asking, what are you doing for Christmas? Many of you have been responding. Evan Christoph says, preaching and spreading the gospel, praying for peace, love, understanding, stability in Africa, Middle East, and all the parts of the world. Many thanks, Evan.
Usman Dauda says, as a Muslim, I pray that our Christian counterparts spend their holiday peacefully in Nigeria and worldwide.
And Yaya Yafa says he's also praying for peace to fellow Christians around the world to celebrate their holiday in peace, happiness, and love without any atrocities, he continues.
Khan Ding says he will be working 12 hours for less than $2 in Sudan.
And Baisal Chow says he will be sleeping. Well, he wants to spend the day sleeping.
Not a good day.
I think to have a well-deservedly rest. And on our Facebook page, Terence Soyang, he's listening live and he says, thank you guys for always being there for the people. Oh, we appreciate for that kind comment. Many thanks, Terence Soyang. And we'll be back after this.
Blog report.
Now, he's a well-renowned and controversial blogger in Kenya. He has earned himself friends and foes in equal measure, but this does not deter him from doing what he thinks is right, being the voice of the voiceless. Robert Alai Onyango describes himself as the internet entrepreneur and a cyber activist. Alai was arrested and apprehended in August for writing a sensitive story, and it took the intervention of other bloggers to push for his release with hashtag Free Alai.
His website, Kahawa Tungu, has over 100,000 followers, and on Twitter, he has over 900,000 followers. And Isaac, I was curious to find out, how did he even manage to amass such a big following on social media?
Most of the time, speaking my mind and engaging honestly with the community of users from Kenya or from the other parts of Africa. What grew my readership is the fact that I used to share a lot of news, breaking news and exclusives, which most of the media houses were either not having or not willing to share.
You have been arrested severally for some of your Facebook posts and tweets, having been accused of insulting even the president, Uhuru Kenyatta. Was this case settled or it's still going on?
I challenged the constitutionality of the charges which were preferred upon me. And, you know, the two sections which were being used to charge me most of the time and other bloggers in the country have been declared as unconstitutional by the High Court. But it's good that, you know, we work with the court and went through the court systems. I got many chances to even run away from the country. But I say that, you know, the best way to build Kenya is to stay around and challenge the laws and listen to criticism and continue criticizing until, you know, they'll change.
It's been years since another political blogger, Bogonko Bosire, disappeared. How safe do you feel as a political blogger in Kenya?
You face a lot of threats when you're a political blogger, when you're not even a blogger, maybe just a critic. Because, you know, for me now, I might say that I have means and I have the expertise to at least stay safe to an extent. But for the upcoming, the young ones who don't even know how to hide their, you know, to stay anonymous, or if they want to use their real identities, the community of the internet platform users allows you to stay anonymous. But when you want to stay open and, you know, to honestly engage, they don't even know the risk. And so we are trying to put across trainings on how to help them stay safe.
Bloggers in Kenya have also been accused of being used by politicians to enhance their agenda online, an issue most of your followers are nowadays accusing you of because they say you are softening your stand on the government. Do you think bloggers are used by politicians in Kenya?
Even in the first world, in the developed countries, you have media houses or even bloggers taking a stand on political issues and not being on one side. You've seen the issue of President Trump in the USA, the issue of Macron in France, Merkel in Germany, where you are. It is very common to have bloggers compromised. But you see, I've been in this game long enough. I don't know if at this stage I would want to sell my soul for short political gains.
What do you think is the future of activism, like being an activist on the internet or on the social media? Does this have a future or is it changing lives or situations in African countries?
I think that the internet offers the most safe, the most convenient way of activism. It's also a very good platform for engaging, you know, reaching out to communities beyond the borders, the local borders.
Robert Olai Onyango, a Kenyan blogger and cyber activist. And now we go to the world of sports, where German side Mainz have signed Nigerian international striker Anthony Uja. Uja joins the Bundesliga side for a 3.5-year deal until summer 2021. I talked to my colleague from the sports desk, Felix Tamsut, about what this means for struggling Mainz, who are ranked 15th in the Bundesliga. Take a listen.
He played in the Bundesliga for quite a few teams, for Mainz, for Cologne, for Werder Bremen, a very well-known player in Germany, coming back to the German Bundesliga, and he could definitely help Mainz, a team that definitely is in need of a striker.
What else do we know about the Nigerian international striker Anthony Uja, who is set to join Mainz?
He had a spell in China. He didn't really find himself there, and it seemed like he was looking for chances to come back to Germany. He had an interview recently where he was quoted as saying that he would like to come back. And there he is. I believe he will be very helpful for Mainz.
The other notable is Mario Gomez, who is returning to Stuttgart from Wolfsburg. What do we know about this transfer?
This is a very big transfer in Germany, mostly because Mario Gomez is coming back home to the club where he started his career. He also said that he believes it will help him increase his chances of being included in Germany's squad for the World Cup. Stuttgart been very good so far this season, at home, away not so much, and they could definitely use Gomez's experience. They're a very young team and he will definitely help them.
I understand the Bundesliga takes a break. So far, what do you make of the season?
Well, it's been a very weird season. Borussia Dortmund started very, very well. Everybody thought they're going to be the champions. Bayern started not so well. But somewhere along the line, the tables have turned and now Bayern is the team to beat. They've started like a big advantage over the team in second place, Schalke, surprisingly. But Borussia Dortmund are also regaining their form. And the second part of the season is definitely bound to be interesting in that regard.
So what do you make out of it? Who could win the Bundesliga title so far?
Well, it seems pretty clear that Bayern are going to be the champions for the sixth time in a row. It's going to take something very surprising for somebody to beat them. I don't believe that will happen, but you'll never know. That's the magic of football. Things can happen.
But now football fans are also looking forward to tomorrow's match between Real Madrid and Barcelona. It's a must win for Real Madrid. What do we know about this match tomorrow?
The one minus it has, apart from being the world's biggest football match, de facto, the one problem is that Ronaldo, Real Madrid's biggest star, just returned to training today. And he's going to train only once before the big game. It's not yet clear whether he'll be in shape. How is he going to play? That's the big question mark. But other than that, I think everybody's anticipating a great match. And football fans all around the world are looking forward to it.
Real Madrid are fourth in the Spanish La Liga. And many fans are curious, can they turn the tide around?
Well, Barcelona are definitely the team to beat, but I don't think it's going to be right to write Real Madrid off, given that Ronaldo will play and most assumptions are that he will play. I don't think it's right to write them off. They can definitely turn it around, even though Barcelona's advantage seems big.
DW's Felix Tamsut with that sports analysis.
And I'm sure sports lovers, in particular football, are looking forward to the El Clásico, as it is called, Real Madrid versus Barcelona.
Yes, for sure.
And now, just to remind you, our main story that you've been commenting on, a white Zimbabwean farmer evicted under the government of Robert Mugabe 6 months ago has returned back to the farm he once owned. Zippy, we have some comments, a mix of comments here, some controversial. But we'll try to read some of them anyway.
Yeah, for sure. Toria Jeans says, I hate to evenly remotely agree with celebrating the farmers, but Zimbabwe went from being the breadbasket of Africa to the basket case. Mm-hmm. Make sure those who are given the land can farm it. There are plenty who can, but they don't have the privilege to get the farms.
Zolwa Ndwandwe from South Africa, he connected the story to what is happening in Zimbabwe. He says, I don't support the call by Cyril Ramaphosa on land expropriation without compensation, seeing that even President Mnangagwa wants to compensate the white Zimbabwean farmers who are forcefully removed from their land and is inviting the white farmers back to Zimbabwe.
Mampoli said land must be expropriated from whites to capable black people to ensure food security.
But one interesting one from Raymond Majongwe, who's a union leader in Zimbabwe, says, just heard from a friend in Rusape that the return of the farmer Rob Smart to his farm has made locals really happy. Smart had always been a popular farmer with locals. Many thanks for those comments and keep them flowing. Keep the debate flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Just to remind you, don't forget to tune in on Christmas for our great show of the day, Christmas show with Jenny Ngingi. Please, you can also still comment on it on our Facebook page. And on behalf of the rest of the crew in the production room there behind the scenes, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Zipporah Nyambura.
We wish you a Merry Christmas.